Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, tennis fans from around the globe. The following program is a presentation of the Yellow Ball Network.
Are we on?
Yep, we're on.
All right, let's go.
Broadcasting live from the Tennis Dynamics Studio in downtown Marietta, Georgia, this is the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Your host for the show this week is J.P. Weber.
Everybody, welcome back. The holidays are over, and we've got another edition of the We Coach Tennis Radio Show. And if you'd like to call in, if you can call in, we'd love to hear from you. The Yellow Ball Hotline is area code 646-652-4856. And we have made it a practice of being on every Tuesday at noon. Over the last couple of weeks, though, with the holidays, my Mac, normally Macs are very reliable computers, my Mac computer went on the fritz. So I had to take it into the Mac store, and I'm not so sure, since Steve Jobs is gone, that they're doing the same thing that they've always done, but it took them a while to fix it, but they've replaced the screen. I got a nice new screen. Some of the little pixelated areas, I guess, had some troubles, and then they put an entirely new logic board on there. So hopefully, we had a couple of shows before Christmas came up, and they were difficult to keep going because the computer was acting up. So now we have everything set up so that it's able to work, and we should be good. A little bit later today on the show, I hope to bring on Lawrence Roddick and Doug Pilot. Both of these guys have kids playing tennis these days, and they're out on the national junior circuit competing, so we want to hear from those guys and see how things are going along. So the two shows that we missed, we're going to try to make those up for everyone later this week. What we'll do is we'll go back and get those guests that we had planned to have on, and we'll bring them back for a couple of special shows. I'll try and fit them in during the week where we can. A lot of stuff's been going on this time of the year. They had the Winter Nationals out in Tucson. They had the Orange Bowl and the Eddie Herr, I think, since we last talked. Some rather, you know, now, and I like to bring this up, some rather sad news. A gentleman that I'd known some, didn't know him as well as others. He and his brother were fantastic players, but the head coach at Lenoir Ryan, Coach Bobby McKee, has passed away. He was suffering from cancer, I believe. I believe it was throat cancer, and for many years he played, if I'm not mistaken, he played at Presbyterian and was an All-American there. Very good player, and he went on to coach there some, and then he had moved on to Lenoir Ryan, and I think I want to say he had been at Lenoir Ryan probably 10 years, and so some friends of mine, Coach Creasy and Coach Waldron, they're mourning the loss of a good friend, and we are too. Coach McKee was an excellent coach. One of the things I think, if people didn't know, but Coach McKee didn't do or go the foreign route, the foreign player route. He recruited all Americans and wherever he was as a coach. So we mourn the passing of Coach Bobby McKee. And so we're going to take a commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to try and get going with the show. Hi, coaches and players. If you play on a tennis court in the Southeast, you've probably played on a tennis court designed, constructed, lighted, or resurfaced by courtmakers.com. Marshall Dye and the guys at Courtmakers will work on any type of court. From my experience with them, they work in a professional manner, they show up on time like they say they will, and they never leave a mess. Courtmakers can provide for all equipment needs. Call them at 770-795-8400. 770-795-8400. That's courtmakers.com.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. I take great pride in calling it the way it is. It's a meat and potato principle of coaching that no one really cares what you know unless they know that you care. As a parent also, I want this and very skilled hands working with my youngster. Coach J.P. Weber's 30 years of experience speaks for itself. Go see him at Laurel Park in Marietta, Georgia. His website is tennisdynamics.net. Tennisdynamics.net.
Hey, come join us at the Laurel Park Tennis Center for the Marietta Grand Prix Series of Tennis Tournaments. This is J.P. Weber, and the Marietta Grand Prix Series of Tournaments are great opportunities for your kids to get super match play. Match play, lunch, and a chance to earn prizes, all sponsored by the Bryan Brothers Foundation, are all part of these great events. For more information, call 770-919-8602 or find us on Facebook. To register, go to tennisdynamics.net. Back. We are hopefully we'll have these guys come on in a minute. Let me start out. I'm going to go on sort of an informal 78-foot soapbox. Over the holidays, I got to meet with numerous portions or numerous parts of the USTA. Now, in private, they admit that the results that they were looking for in terms of kids joining the ranks of tennis players due to ROG and all this stuff with the different balls. It's not working. Nearly everybody I met with would acknowledge that. Now, there's a wide, you know, within the USGA, there's a wide variety of people who work there. There's a wide variety of people who have different backgrounds, and they all look at it in a different light. There are some things that are going on now that I'm seeing, you know, the preliminary portions of and the preliminary changes of things. They may be softening in some areas. I don't know for sure, based on talking to them, but you can see the beginnings of certain things that are changing. I know that they're talking about creating an 11 and under situation here in Georgia, where it's possible the 11 and unders could use the yellow ball. They do have, there are 12 tournaments, I believe. I believe it's 12. I looked it up before I went online here. There are 12 tournaments that are Georgia level threes where you can play with the yellow ball. So there are some changes in that regard. We have some other changes in terms of it looks and it appears to me, for example, that they're going to excuse me, they're going to allow non-sanctioned tournaments to now be on Tennis Link and to host Tennis Link. And I didn't know this at the time, but I've learned it now. The RFP for Tennis Link, the Tennis Link RFP, is out. So the request for proposals, now it may have already been out. I don't know exactly how long or what it entails, but if they can begin with that, and begin to change the Tennis Link experience for people, that would be a great start. You know, that would be one of the best and major starts in the right direction the USGA could make, I think, with the public as a whole. With junior tennis players as a whole, we still need, and I'm still looking for, the USGA at some level to allow for and create that dual path. In my mind, and over these past few meetings with them, I expressed to them that I don't see how it would be an impediment to anything that they have going now or in the future. So the addition or the ability to allow for a dual path for kids, it's now in place that we've got the lines on the courts. It's now in place that there's enough of the nets out there for the 8-and-unders, there's enough of the stuff out there for the 10-and-unders in terms of rackets and the accessibility of the balls, that we can begin to look at create a situation where people, and whether they're coaches, players, or parents, if they would like to have a choice on it, they certainly could avail themselves. There's no reason for them to create. I look at it. I do not look at it as anything that's encouraging more people to play, and maybe hopefully when I get a few of my guests on here, I might ask them. I don't believe, to me, that it is allowing more people to play tennis or encouraging more. I actually think it's almost an impediment to entering the game now. I know at least it's a great feeling for us with when we hold our Marietta Grand Prix here, and when we do those, and we can tell every kid, here's the way you score, here's the balls, you go out and play tennis on that court over there, and all the balls are the same, and all the courts are the same, and, you know, we're able to create out of, you know, with a non-sanctioned tournament, you don't have critical mass of a lot of things, just like at some of these lower-level USGAs right now, we're not having a critical mass. But when they get out there, at these things, we're able to put, you know, a few kids from this age group together with this, that, and now you got an event. You got a tournament, you got an event, the kids are playing, they're competing, they're enjoying it, the parents are able to compete with them, They're enjoying it. Everyone's able to build on it. I do believe that, you know, that there is a responsibility to the pros, to the coaches, to the people that are delivering tennis to do a much better job and work harder at getting that out to people. So that, for the most part, is my 78-foot soapbox for this week. And I think I have my first we have our first guest on here today. Lawrence Roddick, are you there?
Yes, I'm there.
Well, first, let me say, I got to tell you, thank you so much. Your presentation on nutrition, I think it was the first for you in some time, or at least the first. You're going to go out, you're going to now be out on a national circuit. You're going to be in high demand for your stuff. I really appreciate you coming and doing that with this. We had a small turnout at our coaches conference, and I hope to build on it every year, but it was fantastic. You came out and spoke like there was 5,000 people.
Thanks. It was a lot of fun to do for me. And I had some material. I just wanted to see if people would be interested in the material, and I think they were. And I think it's a definite base that we can build upon to get some of this out there. And, you know, tennis is a lifelong sport. In the presentation, I try to present it that tennis is a critical component, or can be a critical component, to lifestyles and the health crisis that's going on in the United States, not only just, you know, nutrition for tennis and competitive tennis, but just overall for the general public. And, you know, I heard you, you know, comment on your 78-foot soapbox a little bit, and that's one of the things the USTA needs to do a better job of, is looking at the big pictures and how each component can fit into the big picture. I think the USTA does a lot of good things, but one of the things that they need to improve upon is how each little section or component of the USTA fits into the bigger picture. And I think that's critical for them moving forward.
Do you think it's not – I think that the reason that they can't quite get that side of it isn't because they don't have the money or the resources or anything, or the apparatus or the infrastructure there. That's just not the sexy side of it. They've got their interest, you know, even though they're really supposed to be about grassroots development more than they are player development, they like that side. That the player development side of tennis is sexy for them.
They haven't been doing a real good job of that the last 6 years, so they better change their perspective if that's the case.
They're not good at the development, or not good at what? I'm not following you.
Absolutely not. Not in the junior development phase. Absolutely not. I think the results speak for themselves.
Well, why is it? I mean, do you see it the same way I do, or do I have anything there, or I'm off base? I mean, I don't think they're attracted to the part of it. It's not fun to go out there and do that, you know, to talk about the, you know, your talk. It's a very good talk, it's not, you know. You didn't necessarily point that talk at, you know, this player or that player, where they're able to go out there, you know, and they put their more talented people. They put their more talented people in dealing with, you know, a small group of very elite athletes, and they ought to probably, in my mind, point a lot of their talented people to doing what you were talking about there. Creating that broad grassroots sort of message and seeing the big picture and selling the big picture of tennis, the health aspects of tennis and things of that nature.
Well, there's a number of ways they can do it. I think they are changing, and hopefully it'll continue. But the strategy that has been presented for the last 5 or 10 years obviously turned off a lot of people, obviously alienated a lot of the tennis resources that are in the United States, and I think they have taken a critical look at that, and I think it is changing for the positive.
All right, so we're into 2015. Now, you've had your son, he came out here, and I don't, you know, if you don't want me to talk about him, I could avoid it, but I got to tell you, I was very impressed. He's 12 years old. He's like a tennis encyclopedia. He knows everything. He loves the game. His desire to be doing it is there. So he comes out, he hits, he looks great. I mean, he's super. He's one of the best players in Texas. You're out on the national circuit competing and taking places. Tell me a little bit about 2014 and how it went for you guys. And tell me, you know, you've got obviously the perspective of having brothers who were participating in this game, and you've got 30 years of that. Now you're looking back at this past year with your son. What are you seeing and what are you learning?
Well, we've learned a lot, both of us. And, you know, that's what's so unique about tennis, is that you can always learn something else. And you just watch tennis, you engage in it, and you're always learning and trying to improve. I can tell you, and, you know, one of the good things the USTA does is I love going to the tournaments. We have a blast. You know, we're there in cities, smaller town cities across the United States. And, you know, the families and the kids, they get along great. They're friends off the court. They're competitors on the court. And we enjoy seeing each other at the tournaments. And we had a great time. I guess back to last February, I guess, we started. So it's really a pleasant journey if it's made that way.
Now, in Texas, he's 12, right? Is he 12 years old still right now?
Yeah, he's 12, yeah.
And he's ranked one or two in the state of Texas in the 12s, right?
He was.
And then Now he's one of the best in the state of Texas in the 14s, right?
No, I wouldn't say that.
He's not.
You know, at the lower end of the age group, it's always an uphill battle. Just trying to get your feet kind of into the game a little bit. So that's where we're at now. But, you know, it's just like, no matter where you go, ITFs, national ranking, lower level rankings, you always got to start at the bottom and work your way up. So that's what we're doing again.
Well, so is he playing up because he needs to play up for the level of competition for him that's appropriate for him? Or is he playing up? Are you having still to dodge some of this? I think one of the coaches out there says that you have to dodge the USTA landmines and the ROG stuff nowadays. Is he having to avoid some of that in Texas, or has he been able to get past that now?
No, the red, orange, and green were past. We're far past that. But it's, you know, when you turn 11, you all of a sudden can play yellow ball tennis pretty well. But when you're 10 years old and 364 days, then you can't play at all. So anyway, we're past that. But, you know, just with the way the birth dates are, and you've talked about it extensively, the birth date being the, you know, if you have a birthday that month, then you got to play a different age group, something like that. And that's just really hard to navigate. And we've talked about it before, where you have to essentially pay attention to about three or four different rankings to get to the tournaments you need to be at. I'm not a real rankings guy, but you do have to pay attention to them so that you play in the tournaments and that you need to play in.
And so you guys, I don't think you skipped the Eddie Herr, and you
right.
But you did come through and you went to the Orange Bowl, right?
Correct.
And he competed in the 12s in that. Can you give me a little bit about what you like what you saw out there on the circuit with the 12s at that level? What impressed you?
Well, first of all, it was played on clay, which I don't necessarily disapprove of, but it does change things for the U.S. kids for the most part. It takes a little while to acclimate, but I think it's a good. I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't think it's a good thing. It just is what it is. As in regards to the boys' 12s, which I can comment on, but I was there and I was there a lot. Very competitive. I heard some foreign coaches, they were standing right next to me, and they looked out on the court, and I don't know if it was the round of 16, maybe, certainly the quarterfinals, but in the round of 16, there was basically a U.S. kid on almost every court. And the foreign coaches took note of that, and they almost literally said, impressive. So that's where they're at. And, you know, I thought the U.S. would have gotten maybe two out of four into the semis. It didn't quite work out that way. but it could have. I mean, you go back and you play those same matches again, and you could get 2 out of 4 kids from the U.S. into the semis.
Well, right away, now when you say that right away, in my mind, and I guess in a lot of, you know, you've got the guys who love the red, orange, and green, it's a success that the red, orange, and green has got now a situation for us where we have, you know, these kids now are in the round of 16, most of them are American. So red, orange, and green is working.
That of course will be the spin that someone will try to put on it, but that nothing could be further from the truth.
If you go
out there, and you'd be hard pressed to find one U.S. kid at the Orange Bowl that came through that system. Now, if there was one there, it'd be great to hear about it, but they cannot make a blanket statement and not point out specifics, because the guys that were playing, the kids that were playing, did not come through that system.
Okay, so what if it's not red, orange, and green? What is it, this is a renaissance of our youth tennis. What's causing the rebirth?
I don't know. I think the USTA and their junior player development has very recently changed their tune. They are more inclusive. They seem to be more in tune with local coaches wanting to involve them. And I think one other thing that they've done is I think the kids are closer at the tournaments, where at the Orange Bowl, for instance, you had U.S. kids rooting for U.S. kids during matches. Now, I don't know if that has taken place before, but I certainly recognized it and took note of it. I thought it was a great thing to have happening, where, you know, they call it Team USA, and I think that's important, where the U.S. kids are rooting for U.S. kids.
Now, tell me, okay, so they're calling it Team USA. How deep is Team USA in the 12s? How many kids do they select for that?
I don't know. I want to say 50, 60, something like that.
So you got like 50, 60 kids. That's
Maybe it's less. Wait. Let me go back. Maybe 30.
I was thinking it was going to be, you know, like, you know, somewhere between 5, 10, 8, something like that. A small group, you know, they were able to manage somehow. But so they're not, you know, if they were picking 30 and trying to micromanage them the way they were in years previous, that would be tough. But now it sounds to me like, number one, when you made the statement that they're becoming more inclusive, what you're saying is that they're listening to the private coaches a little bit more, and they're allowing the private coaches to get more involved a little bit. And by doing that, they're able to create a team, and it's more of a loose structure type of team, and they're able to have a lot more kids on that team, at least included on the team. Does that sound correct? Am I hearing you?
I think the overall morale is a lot better. They're diluting a little bit the individual aspect of the sport, where you're out there on an island, so to speak, you know, fighting tooth and nail to try to get through this tennis world. And now you have somewhat of a support structure where, you know, you can rely upon 5, 10, maybe 15 people that are in your corner and want you to succeed.
Well, I like that a lot better. I think that's going to be something that's probably going to serve them well, as long as they continue, I think, to allow the relationship with the individual, you know, with the coaches that they have at home and places of that nature. If they're bringing them in and they're including them into the structure of this sort of, you know, I think it's a much better way to operate. It's not getting too tight and too small with, you know, 5 to 10 kids, but it's broadening it out a little bit more. What did you see in terms of other countries? Did you see players from other countries that impressed you? Okay, let me try it this way. You mentioned to me in the round of 16 we had a player on every court in the 12s and the boys. How about in the final result? How'd we do?
Well, again, in the quarters, we had 4 out of 8 in the quarterfinals. None of them made it through to the semis, but again, you play those same matches again, and you're going to have a different outcome on, you know, 2 or 3 of the courts. Overall, U.S. was very competitive, extremely competitive, and the foreign coaches took note of that, and they were impressed. So, you know, 12 years, the guy who won it was from Croatia, I believe. You know, strong kid, quality strokes, but nothing a U.S. player couldn't match. Not necessarily one there. I think he was the best player in the tournament, but nothing in years to come that the U.S. couldn't produce. The Japanese had a strong contingent. They were maybe 3, 4, 5 deep. Korea had a strong contingent. They were 3, 4, 5 deep. And besides that, I don't recall other countries being that deep. Now, I didn't see Spain there. They probably have some players. France wasn't there that I recall. Maybe they were. But overall, very, very competitive.
Let me take a real quick commercial break. When we come right back, we'll bring on some more guests. We're here on the We Coach Tennis Radio Show with Lawrence Roddick, Doug Pollitt. Hopefully Coach Creasy will call in. The number to call in is 646-652-4856, and we're going to take a real quick break, and we'll be right back.
I can't think of a better place to go than courtmakers.com for any of my court equipment needs. Any kind of equipment that you need for your club or facility, windscreens, nets, net straps, benches, scoreboards, you can find all of this at courtmakers.com. Or like them on Facebook and see all the latest stuff that they're doing in court construction, resurfacing, and lighting. That's courtmakers.com, courtmakers.com.
Hi, this is Coach Chuck Creasy. All of you know that I take pride in calling it the way it is, and boy, oh boy, is it an exciting time in tennis. The 10 and under stuff, the juniors, the pros, and college. If you want to hear the cutting edge of the real stuff and not just the diluted and watered-down fluff, folks, listen to Coach J.P. Weber on the We Coach Tennis program every Tuesday at noon Eastern Standard Time here on the Yellow Ball Network.
I'm on the radio here. We've got Lawrence Roddick as a guest. I've also got, I've got two Texans on now. Doug Pollitt, are you on? Are you able to hear us?
Yes. Yeah, can you hear me?
All right, Doug, we're on with Lawrence. Lawrence and you both.
Hi, Doug.
Hey, Lawrence, how are you?
Good.
He's got a girl. Or you've got a girl playing in the... in the 12s, he's got a boy playing in the 12s. I was on getting some observations from Lawrence about how things went in 2014. So you're out there this past year as well. You've been all over the country trying to compete, doing your stuff. You were down at the Orange Bowl. How are you seeing things? Lawrence is saying he's feeling and seeing some change in the air with the USGA. He made mention to me of Team USA. Can you tell me how you're seeing things?
Actually, they are listening to the coaches or to their meetings more. So they are, you know, they seem to be talking to the personal coaches more. I think they're doing a better job. I know that Jack Sharp also feels that it's better. So, you know, there's still some things that I think that need to be improved. I've got a couple little guys coming up that I used to be able to have them just play up, but now they got to go through and play so many of the orange and then so many of the green and so on. So,
you know, you two are the last, you both of you are the last generation. I had Will Seagraves on the show back in the fall. You're the last generation that's going to be able to to have said that they could have gotten kids at a young age on a yellow ball, it's very much ingrained now where it's going to be a required green or orange, for lack of a better term, you know, it's going to be a qualification. They're going to have to go through that in order to make it to the other level.
Yeah, well, I think that they'll have to play the tournaments, but I if you talk to the coaches that are developing a lot of players, I'll probably mention Jack Sharp 10 times on your broadcast, but Jack Sharp is producing a lot of players. Gianna's doubles partner's parents said, well, you know, where do you work, Coach Sharp, and what do you do adults? And Jack laughed and goes, I haven't done adults in 34 years, you know. So he's not joking. But so the thing is, if you talk to the guys that are really developing a lot of players at the national level, I'm pretty sure, talking because I've talked to a few of them, they teach however they want with the yellow ball, and then their kids will just go play the tournament and then get their points and then move on. So, you know, that's kind of what they're doing. They're not – Jack's not having his players, Lansdorf's not having his players train with that ball. They'll go play the tournament, but they're not like preparing for that tournament. They're just doing it to get the points to move on. Does that make sense?
Yeah. You see it the same way, Lawrence?
Well, I'm not exposed to, you know, coaches who are producing a lot of players. But what you're going to see, and, you know, someone's going to have to maybe put a map out there as to, you know, what sections are doing this red, orange, green, how heavy is the mandate, and then start plotting out the results at the national level and compare them. I think what you're going to see is you're going to see more and more kids from the sections don't have the mandate do better at earlier ages at the national level. If you go and Doug can comment on this.
You mentioned I hate to interrupt you, but you've actually done a little bit of that, haven't you? Haven't you plotted some of that out?
I've done it a little bit, but I think I think someone can actually do the numbers and do it formally, and I think it needs to be done. And I think this is going to start coming out over the next year or two. And what I think you're going to see, I mean, Doug, what I was going to get to is Doug can comment on this much better than I, because girls will develop earlier and do better nationally at an earlier age than boys will. But I would say in, 12 and under girls, you're going to have a higher percentage of girls that are 10 or 11 doing well compared to boys who are 10 or 11 doing well. And so you're going to first see it in 12 and under girls, and you're going to see those sections that have this mandate are going to, the girls at 11 years old are going to have a harder time at the national level. And if you're a quality, top quality girl at, you want to be making inroads in 12 and unders when you're 10, 11 years old, for sure. And Doug can comment on that more than I, because his daughter, obviously he has a daughter and that's gone through it.
Now, both of you guys, you know, there's a segment out there of the people that think you're nuts to even think there's a correlation between 12 and under or 10 and under and how good a player is going to be 10 years later. Is that right? I mean, does that touch on that at all, what Lawrence is saying? I mean, you guys are out here spending this money and doing all this stuff, and there are people out there that just think it's crazy to do that.
Doug, you want to comment?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. Because you're a great 12 and under doesn't mean you're going to be a great pro. And because you are a great 12 and under doesn't mean you won't be a great pro. I mean, is there a correlation? I think that, it's situational. The player, everybody's individual. I mean, I don't. Andy Roddick was a lot younger than me, so I'm not sure. I don't know his junior really background and what he did in 12s and 14s. But Lawrence would obviously be able to answer some of that. But I don't know. I know Richie Renneberg and Ricky Leach. They were phenomenal 12 and unders. Michael Chang was an amazing 12 and under.
Well,
Pete Sampras, I don't know if there's a definite correlation. My feeling is like I was watching JC play, and I went up to Lawrence and said, man, his forehand looks a lot better. I could tell his coach was working on it. You know, I could just tell, you know. So the big thing is that you're developing. You're playing the top players. The games are developing. If you're not moving forward, you're going backwards. And as long as there's a little bit of forward movement, then that's a good thing. Some kids will improve really fast at 11 years old. Some kids will improve very slowly at 11 years old. And then 14, it can change. It shuffles around. But my big thing is that I've got to see some improvement somewhere. I got to see a little bit of forward development. And then I know if you're going forward, then that's good. And that's all, you know, you can ask for. I don't know. I think to junior tennis, to do this like Lawrence and I are doing is, I joke, you got to be a little crazy. I love it. I mean, I go there and my daughter's playing. I know Lawrence watches son. It eats you up inside. It's hard to watch. You're trying to smile when they're missing ducks. It's what we do. It's fun. That's part of the deal. And so I don't know if there's any correlation. And then I think every kid's different. You know, every kid's different. There's been people at 12 and under that I thought would make it on the tour and didn't. And there's people that I never thought would make it. I never thought would make it. I don't want to mention their names right now. And they made it. And they made it big.
Now, you know, Doug,
I'll give you an example. I never saw Andre Agassi at 14 years old. But Jack Sharp did. And Jack goes, I never thought he was going to make it. He was a crazy little kid. Best ball striker, but the guy was nuts. Yeah, there's no way. Jack was asked at the U.S. Open years ago to check out this player, okay? He played first round at the U.S. Open main draw, and then he was going to play the juniors a week later. Jack saw him play. The guy went ballistic. After the match, he lost first round to Shanken, funny-looking player, smashed every racket behind the umpire's chair. Jack reported back to the USTA. This kid's got a ton of talent. Don't think he's going to make it till he starts to grow up. That guy's name was Roger Federer. He won the juniors. He won the juniors a week later. Jack goes, I don't know how he got the racket so fast. Jack said he smashed every racket behind the umpire's chair. I go, Jack, seriously, are you exaggerating? No, Jack goes, no. I had to assess it. I had to take a notepad to the USTA. They asked me to check out this guy, this new kid, or not new kid. And he goes, I didn't think he was going to be as good as he was because he was nuts. You know? And so... I don't think you know. You really don't know. You know.
Let me ask you. I asked Lawrence. I asked him. Lawrence made mention of the fact he feels like there's a sort of a rebirth coming on. We had some great showings in some of the younger age groups. And I said, well, that's great news for the red, orange, and green guys. That proves that what they've been saying is working. No, Lawrence said no. He didn't agree with that.
No. I talked to the top players. There's only a handful that start and have played ROG and not for long. I mean, they're most of all these top players. I know the girls' side. I can tell you right now. Whitney Oswege won the Orange Bowl. Her dad's a coach at IMG. I've known her for 4 years. I remember she never used an orange. She always was yellow. The girl that lost in the finals won the Eddie Herr. Gianna played at Little Mo 3 years ago. It wasn't orange or green. Sato from Japan. So I already know that these people, these top kids, 90% of them have been just playing with regular ball. But again,
Are you as optimistic as Lawrence is in terms of the rebirth?
I think American tennis, I've always said this, I've watched a lot of tennis. American tennis is very strong and deep. I think that what's going to happen is we don't know when and we don't know who will be the next player to really excel, you know, and just really jump up there. But we have a bunch of really, really good young players. There's no question about it. You know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, no one knows. I mean, if Steve Johnson has a great 2015 and goes from 35 in the world to 10, he's going to be like, oh, we knew that was the next guy. No, we didn't. You know, I mean, everybody thought Ryan Harrison was going to be the next guy. He still might be, but he's dropped a little bit. I mean, we just don't know, but we have a lot of depth. We have a lot of people coming up. On the girls' side, there's a ton of them, you know. And, hey, there may not be any of them. You know, we might be sitting here 10 years from now going, Andy Roddick was the last guy who won a major. I mean, we don't know. I mean, you know, but, I mean, to sit there and say that, you know, that's the problem. You can't pick it. I'm sorry. You can't pick it. Everybody that says they can pick it, I don't think you can pick it.
Let me try. I'm going to try and bring on. I've got about 15 minutes left, and I've got a real tight schedule today. I got Coach Creasy here on the line. Coach, you been listening in to any of this? These gentlemen.
Yeah, I sure. Yeah, great stuff, guys. How are you?
Good, Coach. At
the outset of the show, I mentioned, Coach, we lost a good coach. Bobby McKee passed away of cancer.
Yeah.
No, he's a friend of yours, so my condolences.
Well, Bobby was on my first team at Clemson. He transferred after 2 years, went to Presbyterian College, played doubles with Chuck Waldron, and went on to coach at Presbyterian College for many years, and actually was National Coach of the Year, probably predominantly for his stand with recruiting only American players. He had only American teams. He was very strong about getting South Carolina kids and Southern kids and coaching them up and doing a wonderful job. And then, you know, of course, his older brother was Richard McKee, who was a great, great player with Freddie McNair at North Carolina. I think they were runners-up at the NCAAs in the must have been the early 70s, mid-70s in there. But Bobby, they were both taught by Dick McKee, their father, in Spartanburg. Just old school work ethic, old school ethics, old school hard work. And Bobby found out he had cancer in November and died January 1st. And just a sad, sad day for tennis in South Carolina, for everybody. So everybody listen to this. Keep the family in your prayers. It was a tragedy that all happened within about 5 or 6 weeks, and it's one of those sad stories, but you know, we'll be thinking about Bobby a lot. He was a special human being. He finished career at Lenoir Ryan up in North Carolina at these two school, and so anyhow, so
okay.
that's one of the selfless teachers out there that just give of themselves a lot.
Were you able to hear any of Coach Pilot and Coach?
Yeah, a lot. I just had a couple of thoughts, and I'll listen. I get a chance to give my opinions a lot. But first of all, those two guys they've got a ride. They're their own person. Doug Pilot was a competitor first, probably a tennis player second. He had a heart, big heart. Needed a bigger body, Doug. But golly, he knew how to compete. And you know, he said that stuff about Federer and Agassi. Well, you know, the two ingredients there, those guys hated to lose, and they were competitors first. And I wanted to make this a couple comments. First of all, it took me a lot of years in coaching to realize that I saw my players, but I couldn't feel what they were feeling. Players feel themselves but can't see what they're doing. And that's a very profound statement in that players can't see themselves, they only feel themselves. And we observe players from the outside in. They play from the inside out. But if you notice, through all of our history, that we've had always the best kids up through about 15 or so. We're always winning world championships, always doing well in the younger age groups because of our opportunities and because of great mechanical skills. But the game mechanically with kids, when they're 10 to 14, the kids who mechanically are good and they're good on the outside with their bodies and the physical part of the skills shine in tennis. But as all you guys know, when you get to be 15 to 20 years old, then it's your thought process on the court and the mental part of the game. And then the emotional part of the game of how well you compete And then I would say the lower age groups is probably 70-80% mechanical, 20-30% toughness. And first is mechanical on how big a kid might be or how good their strokes are. But up when they're 20 to 25 years old, it's about 80% what's inside of them, the mental and emotional part of the game. And the mechanical stuff is all pretty much what it's going to be. It's the difference is not made there. So here's my point. There's lots of disappointment in the United States of America right now because of the failed potential that we have everywhere. Great kids, mechanically great, this whole great kid group of kids coming up, where we always drop the ball is about 16, 17, and 18 years old in there. A lot of the kids think, well, okay, I'm going to go to college. I'm not even going after this pro stuff. And then some of the kids, basically, they keep doing the same things that made them good when they were 11, 12, and 13 years old. The critical thing here is that we now could not have done a worse job at dumbing things down with these abbreviated sets, no ad scoring, 10-point tiebreakers. This 10-point tiebreaker, JP, can I call it a 10-point tiebreaker crap? You know, can we just call it crap? You know what it is? These kids, I had a group of kids this summer, two or three in a group of 50 had played one-third set the whole summer. You know, so what we do, we make the outside of the car great, but the inside, the engine is faulty. You know, we never develop the toughness and the competitiveness, and we're scared to death of pushing our little kids too hard. It's laughable. So the bottom line on the thing, we're doing a great job in many, many ways, and but we've got to develop the inside of the players, and you only do that with helping them become great competitors like you guys, like Doug was talking about, Federer, Agassi, the way Pilot was, the way Renenberg was, the way these guys were as juniors. They hated losing terribly, and if they didn't handle it right all the time, they acted like little punks sometimes and just did wrong things. You know, they never did it out of, you know, they did it because they hated losing. And our kids do not hate losing enough. The ones that get great are the ones that hate losing enough. And they get the physical part of the game, but eventually we put them through, they go through enough to where when they get to be 20 years old, they got the full package. So
that's basically the point I wanted to make. Let me grab these guys back on here and get them to react to Coach Creasy there, because it actually dovetailed right into what I was going to – Coach was here, Lawrence. I don't know if you got to see some of his movement stuff, but there's a big push toward movement, and there's a big push to – you know, well, you know, there's always been a push. There's always been the dilemma. I suppose Coach is talking about it there a little bit, but technique versus I don't know. Do I want to go to mental toughness with you, Lawrence?
that's kind of an open wound right now.
Yeah, let me technique versus movement, Lawrence, and maybe react to Coach Creasy. I'll give you a couple minutes, and then let me get Doug on, and then I got to hit the road today early.
Well, I guess he was talking about technique, and you can go to mental toughness or emotional stability on the court.
Character.
Absolutely. But I think it also depends on what level of tennis you're talking about. If you're talking more towards the elite status or D1 or something like that, you have to have both. There's no doubt in my mind about that. And, you know, to develop that, and, you know, I never really thought about it. He knows much better than I do. You know, if you're going to develop these kids 15, 16, 17 years old, which is, you know, the prime age to really develop, to really see what these kids are made of, to really see if they're going to, you know, have a chance on the Pro Tour or D1 or whatever, I've always been a proponent of the ITF route. And a lot of people would disagree with me on that. However, you know, you'll be hard-pressed to come up with a lot of kids that develop just purely through the USTA model up onto the pro scene or something like that. I'm just a big advocate of it. I think instead of having 5 or 10 kids out there. You know, if the U.S. would come out and have literally 100 kids on that ITF circuit really going after it, I think the tennis world would really, really blink their eyes. And I think instead of, and you mentioned before, instead of having 5 kids, 10 kids, 50, whatever the kids is, to have hundreds out there really going after it. And some will develop that emotional ability, and some won't. But my
you
point
know,
is
you know, you're mentioning that, just to caution you on that, actually, if I'm not mistaken, Jerry Simmons actually had created that. He actually had it where it was very popular. But do you know what happened, Lawrence? It was in the 90s and 2000. Do you know what happened with all that?
No.
It got so popular, the USTA wanted to – am I right, Doug? USTA took it over and killed it. The USTA, well, the agents got involved. They ended up – they killed it. Jerry Simmons had won a very competitive, I think, 10 ITF events where all the great Americans were playing. It was much more heavily played. And if I'm not mistaken, that's what happened.
Well, that's – you know – I'm not surprised. I don't know.
Like you're saying, if it became popular, like what you're saying, I worry about they would come in and might influence. Doug, Coach talked. We got a few more minutes. Lawrence, I'll give you the last sort of spot on here.
I like ITF for the variety. There's no doubt. Eddie Herr and the Orange Bowl see some different kids and all that, so I do like that. Coach Creasy's been around like Jack Sharp 100 years, so when they speak, it's like E.F. Hutton. And I agree that watching these players, I mean, the technique at the national level was, well, I mean, Jack was sitting next to me saying, yeah, I mean, it's not like the old days. There was a lot of kids with bad technique. Now there's a lot of good coaching, and these kids were – good technique at a young age. I mean, it was pretty impressive. And hitting the ball hard and hitting the ball well. I mean, it was very impressive. But, you know, Coach Creasy hit on something that there's got to be a reason why we have such good depth. And then 16-17, we have not been able to, obviously dumbing it down with, you know, but the emotion that we have not been able to get to that next level. I don't like the 10-point tiebreaker. I like the 2 out of 3 sets. I like the doubles 2 out of 3 sets. They now at when we first started playing nationals three, four years ago, the third set was played out in doubles. I'm positive. At the Winter Nationals, we played the third set out in doubles. Now the third set is a 10-point tiebreaker in doubles. So they're shortening it up constantly, and it's just you're not developing the doubles players. You're not developing all the skills. I mean, it's not making them as mentally tough. I agree with that. So there's definitely something we got to think about when these kids are 15, 16, 17, why they're so good at a young age. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're just not stepping up.
I got about 30 seconds for each of you. So what I want to ask you real quick, your time, Lawrence, that you're spending, JC on the court, how much of his does he spend a lot of time on technique? And we got,
yes.
How about movement? Yes. As opposed to movement nowadays, how much time is he spending? You got a 12 and under boy, movement, technique, what are you looking at there? How much time? And I gave you about 20 more seconds.
A day?
If you had to make a general comment.
Well, I think you spend just as much time on movement as you do your strokes. How's that?
Okay. Doug, what's it like
I agree with Lawrence on that. I agree with Lawrence on that. I mean, you gotta, especially with kids, man, they just stop moving. I mean, they don't even know it half the time. You got to stay on them. You got to get them to. Yeah, I think especially with kids.
All right, real quick question, Doug. Movement nowadays, is it taught more and is it needed to be taught more than it was back in the day?
No, Pancho Segura, I think, was a phenomenal coach from what I've heard. And his big thing was take care of the footwork and everything else will follow. and that was back in this. So, and there's a lot to be said for that. Now, you can't just do footwork and then the kid's using pancake grip and whatever, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for that. And Segura, still, tremendous amount of respect for his coaching, no doubt about it.
All right, guys, thanks for coming on. Doug, thanks for coming on. I got to run today. I appreciate y'all coming on. Monday, we've got Jack Sharp on the show. Got Jack Sharp on next Monday. So I look forward to that. Hopefully you guys will call in at that time, Monday at noon. And I'll have a couple more extra added shows. We'll be back next week.
This has been the We Coach Tennis Radio Show on the Yellow Ball Network. Check in here with us every Tuesday at noon and listen to another great coach talk about what makes their program a success.